You're listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, Asheville's premier soccer podcast. Guys, welcome back to another episode of You're Smarter Than Us. Tim here. I got Chris with me. And guys, yes. I have Mr. Asheville, Cameron Saul. Cameron, say hello to the folks.
Hello. I'm just happy to be here. So, perfect.
Awesome. Well, Cameron, thank you for joining us. We deeply appreciate it. And let's just jump right into it. Cameron, can you tell us a little bit about your background in soccer in England? You're from North London.
Yeah.
Tottenham. Chris and I are both Arsenal fans. But we do know you're a Man U supporter.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what the youth ranks are like over there?
I'd say youth football is very different in England than it is over here. I've been luckily enough to be involved with some clubs over here, so I can kind of see the difference. Everybody starts really young, and soccer's the only sport that we all play. So that's a difference. I'd say there's a difference in the level of the kids. So I'd say from about 5 to 10 years old, that's all people are really playing. So the level of the British kids is definitely superior.
And these kids, they're starting to join. When do you actually get into academy football from like pro clubs in London?
So pretty much from about 5-6 years old. So that's when the youngest age group is. I got involved at around 10 years old. I was actually at Tottenham's academy. And that was a great experience. It's amazing. You get to see all the pros. You get to see them train. It's just inspiring every single day that you're there. But it's just different. So when you're young and you're good, you have opportunities to go and play for these top teams, but it's very limited. There's not a lot of opportunities. And with the way England is, depending on where you're from, it really impacts. I mean, it's the same over here. It impacts what team you're gonna play for.
Yeah, so that's really interesting how you're saying that kids are getting involved in academy football for pro teams at 5 and 6, whereas in the United States, they're playing like recreational soccer at that same age. So how long did you play with Tottenham in the academy there? Like how long were you with them?
So I was with them for 2 years. Things didn't work out there. And I actually went to a different team called Luton Town.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, they were in the Championship at the time, which is the second tier.
Yeah.
And I was there until 15. I was at QPR for a little bit.
Wow.
And then I actually completely stopped playing. And at this stage, so just going back to what you said a little bit earlier, we play structured football from a very young age. So when you get to about 15, 16, they already expect you to be ready. They expect you to be the finished article. They want you to be pretty much ready to go into the first team. And that's different than over here. So because you guys have that college
different
set up.
Different isn't even the word. Yeah. Okay? Let's just put that out there.
Yeah. So they prepare you a lot younger and they expect you to be ready at an early age.
So what made you at 16 just want to kind of walk away?
I don't know, it was very competitive. And I'd say, personally, I just didn't think I was ready, mentally. There's a lot that goes into it, being, I guess, a football player in England. And at that age, a lot of kids just aren't ready. They're good enough, but there's so much other aspects that you have to do.
Let's be honest, at 15 and 16, you're a kid. All
100%.
That pressure.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I didn't know what I wanted to do when I was 15 or 16, let alone take that path. So, I mean, that's definitely a lot of pressure for sure.
Yeah. So, like, when I look at kids coming up and playing in the first team, I find it crazy because at that age, I really wasn't ready.
Right.
So, I admire any kid that is playing at that level at such a young age. It's really a tough feat to achieve.
So, you know, I'm looking at your stats and stuff like that, and I'm looking and I see Iowa on there, which seems like a stretch.
Yeah.
So how do you end up in Iowa?
So what happened is this. So when I came over to America, I was actually at a Division II school in Georgia. And my first year there
was... So you were recruited by a Division II school?
Yes, that's correct. So I was at that school and my freshman year was awful. The NCAA didn't make me eligible. So I'd flown all this way here and I couldn't play. I didn't know what to do and it was a tough period for me. So
you're in Georgia, you're not even playing.
Yep, okay. I'm in Georgia, not even playing. And pretty much I just didn't know what to do. And you can imagine it's tough. Like, I'd never even been here before. This was my first time in the country. And if you know anything about the school I went to called Young Harris, it's in the mountain. There's nothing around.
Atlanta.
Oh, no, we're not talking Atlanta. Yeah, we're talking rural in the mountains. So it was just very different than what I've been used to, especially growing up in London.
Right, I can only imagine.
So after that, I realized I needed to look for somewhere else. So I actually got contacted by a coach in Iowa. He was English. His name is Michael Wilson. He's actually coaching in the WPSL right now for a team called Fortuna Tulsa, who them and Asheville are kind of battling for who has the highest attendance, which is pretty cool. And he contacted me. The school was in Iowa, and it just worked out. So because it wasn't the NCAA, I was allowed to go there and play.
So your freshman year was rough, even though, from what I understand, you took them to the quarterfinals of the national championship.
Yeah, it was real rough.
But it was still pretty rough. More the living environment.
Yeah, awful.
All right. So then you went to Iowa, which I would imagine is not exactly a metropolis.
Okay, so I wasn't ready for Iowa. Okay. I'm going to put that out there. I was told it was going to be cold, and I transferred out there in the spring, so it was like January. I get there, my first day was like minus 20.
Okay.
Completely different experience than anything I've ever seen or heard of or experienced. It was interesting, and it was very different than Georgia, again, and different from London. I was very fortunate there, though, that the coach looked after me. He promised me a lot, which is why I went there, and he delivered on everything that he said he was going to do for me. And that was the best 2.5 years of my life, 100%.
Did you find that the game was kind of the connective tissue, though? Or when you came to Georgia and then to Iowa, was the game so different that even that was a little bit of a learning curve in terms of maybe your teammates or the way you're being coached? Or did you feel like you were a more mature player than your teammates?
I'd say my first school prepared me for college soccer. When I first came here, I would say also that I wasn't even ready for that. Like, college soccer is very different than playing in the UK. People are a lot more athletic over here. There's a big emphasis on physicality. And that's something I didn't have. And that's something I've had to work on. So when I look at me, my freshman year to now, complete change as a player. And when I went to Iowa, I kind of went over there with a mentality that I wanted to go over there and prove a point, because things didn't work well for me in Georgia. So I wanted to go there and really help the program. So the school I actually went to had never had a winning season. Never been to the national tournament, and the team just wasn't as dedicated as it needed to be. So I was very fortunate that I could go there, and it was like a blank canvas. I knew that any success the team had was going to be down to an input that I would have made on the team. And I look back on my 2 years there, and we won a conference, we went to the national tournament, and we did all the things and all the goals that I set out from the beginning. So for me, it was the best feeling ever. Yeah.
So how did Gary Hamill know to contact and recruit you in 2016? Am I mistaken? Did you play for the Georgia Revolution?
Yeah. Okay, so I've been in contact with Gary on multiple occasions. I almost actually went to Mars Hill when I first came to America. Okay. And he was aware of me when I was down at Young Harris. So me and him had been in contact a little bit. And the year prior to joining Asheville, I was down at Georgia Revolution. And that was interesting. I enjoyed my time down there. It was nice. The owners are great people. But I got hurt. So I actually tore my meniscus in my knee. And that was a very tough period for me, because I didn't know what I'd done at the time. Had to get an MRI, and I was really worried, because summer is pretty close to the college season. So that happened anyway.
Was that your first major injury?
Yeah, first major injury. Okay. I've never broken a bone. I've never done anything serious. So that was scary.
Right.
I couldn't walk. I couldn't put any pressure on my knee. I really struggled with that. But I was fortunate that the club actually helped me. Georgia Revolution actually put a lot of time into me. They got me rehab and did some things like that. So that was great. But that year I went back to my college season, and I was still hurt, but for some reason I had a really, really good year. And I was getting a lot of attention from different people and different clubs, and Gary reached back out to me and he said, Asheville starting a team. This is what he wants to build. He wanted me to be a part of it. And from that moment on, I was sold. And it's been the best thing I could ever imagine.
You said we're going to brand you as Mr. Asheville.
I wish you would have said that back then.
Yeah. Incentives and whatnot to get you. And you said, hey, let's do this. So now, are you done with college?
Okay, so I've graduated.
Okay.
So I graduated in May from my university in Iowa. However, I still have a year left to play because of that redshirt year, my freshman year. So I've actually just signed down at Len O'Ryan in Hickory. So I'm not too far away now. So I'm going to be around a lot more than I have been.
Oh, so you're going to be doing more North Carolina soccer this coming fall.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Now, what division are they in?
They're Division Two.
Division Two. Okay.
Yes.
Well, that's interesting. Keep you here. Keep your title.
So you became Asheville City's first signing.
Yes.
Could tell us a little bit about what it was like the first year seeing a club, you know, never have existed before. Game one, I believe you scored Asheville's first goal. What was that first year like?
So that first year, I did not know what to expect. My only experience...
That seems to be a reoccurring theme from Ryan Kelly down to the supporters group. Nobody.
I've never heard of Asheville.
I'd heard of it, but I hadn't been here. So, I did not know what to expect. A new team in a city that... I mean, it's a soccer city. Everyone likes it here. But you never know how the city's going to take the team. So it was interesting. Bring in 30 guys, different countries, everyone together, brand new coach. It was just an experience that I can never forget. I was so happy to be a part of it. Being the first sign-in as well was great for me. My school supported me a lot. It was the best year. I can't even explain how great that year was for us. And I'm very fortunate here that we have some great owners. So Ryan Kelly, he's been absolutely tremendous for all of the players.
Yeah.
What I would say is this though, Asheville treats their players better than any club I've ever seen. What they give their players, how they treat them, we are pretty much professionals here. We get everything we need, whether it's food, trainers, treatment, best facilities, housing.
You have to play a memorial, unfortunately.
And then we have to play a memorial.
Speaking of memorial, how does the fan base of Asheville City, because we know that that is one thing that Asheville City has right now, is a dedicated fan base that comes out every game,
rain,
or shine, especially the first season. So how does the crowd match up to what you've played in front of before? Is it bigger or...
Bigger. Nothing compares. I have never played in front of a crowd like how we have here. The South Slope Blues and just everyone else that comes out to the game. It's an amazing atmosphere. And all my friends all are jealous of me. They all want to play Asheville City. Everybody. And even opposing teams. Literally every game when we come off the field, the players are like, oh man, we'd love to play here. We'd love to have these sort of fans.
We actually addressed that last podcast as... You know, maybe that's going to pay to be a recruiting element of Asheville City just because of the fan base and the crowd. I mean, you look at going to play at Knoxville and there's seven people, you know, and it's not exactly exciting. I don't even think loud words and language are even allowed. No beer is allowed, no nothing. And then you come here and it's lights, camera, action.
Yeah. It's a huge tool for us to have these sort of fans. I mean, who wouldn't want to be here and play? Unfortunately, it works against us as well because for every team, it's like a cup final. They come here and it's their biggest game. Like they love it. Yeah. So everyone that comes to play here is super hyped up because when else are they going to get to play in front of so many fans that are going to be screaming and be right on top of you, essentially? Yeah. Because, there might be some other teams that have good fan bases, but the way Memorial's set up, it's so tight. It feels so different than any other team. It's absolutely crazy and insane. And I hope it continues to grow. Honestly, I mean, if we can keep increasing the fan base, it's only going to make this a better and better environment to be involved in. So
what has your reaction been to the women's inaugural season? One of my favorite things to always see is the women working the men's game, the men working the women's game. And I know in, you know, professional leagues over in England, there's some crossover maybe on the training pitch. And, you know, when you see them go out to charity events, you'll see them kind of co-mingle. But I love seeing you guys pick on each other, cheer each other on, come to each other's games. What has it been like to have almost like peer rivals? Because obviously they're doing really well.
Yeah, and they let us know about it. Yeah, they certainly do. Having the girls is the best thing that could have happened. When I heard about it the first time, I was interested, but I've never really seen a girls team in this level. So every MPSL team I played at was just men's. Just having them has really changed the dynamics for all of us. Firstly, the girls are great. They win every game, which is it's hard for us to keep up with. I do get a few people letting me know that apparently the men's are the second best team in Asheville. But just having that dynamic of them cheering us on and us supporting them is great. Like, they're our biggest supporters. They're there every game. We can always hear them when we score. And I absolutely love it. So I really hope that they continue doing well and they actually win the whole thing, because right now they're looking very, very good.
I think there's a chance, honestly. You know, really, the women's team is, in the atmosphere at both men's and women's game, it is really something quite special. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
You know, the co-support between the two teams is just, it's like really nothing else. And I think, like you said, it's really only going to grow. I don't see it slowing down at all. Really,
yeah, not at all. So, and for them to be their first year and for them to be so dominant is incredible. Absolutely incredible. So that's a credit to everybody, from the owners, the coaches, and the players. Like, they've made it a really special team to be a part of.
At this point, you guys are probably thinking, they could take us, maybe. I don't know.
Parker might have some issues with those headers coming off that back line, man. Those are some bullet headers. So, how has it been this year? You've kind of been on and off the pitch.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily know that you've played a full 90.
No, not yet.
But at the same time, I believe you're the leading scorer.
Yeah.
You make something happen every time you come on the pitch. There's been games where we've desperately needed that, you know, your body in there. You create your own shots. What is, you know, you started off the year on the just not even playing.
Yeah.
Then you came off the bench a few times, you started a few games, and now you're kind of back out. Has it been a frustrating season?
Honestly, no. So I came here and I wasn't fully fit. I wasn't ready. So we had a really, really bad winter in Iowa. So there was no soccer being played at all. So when I came here, it was catch-up time. So I had to come in and work really hard. So I understood I wasn't going to play the first couple games. Unfortunately, in practice, I got an injury. And that set me back. So that's the reason you didn't see me the first couple games, pretty much. And then once I actually got to play, so I played against Chattanooga and scored, mm-hmm. Knoxville scored, into Nashville and scored. That's a pretty good record, actually. I picked up another injury, which is why I'm wearing a boot right now.
So this was a contact injury, not
a
muscular
injury. Yeah. And it's just been a season of injuries. I mean, I could look at it and feel frustrated, but I'm just taking all the positives out of it, honestly. I know what I can bring to the team, and I know once I'm fully fit that I'm going to have a good season, a good rest of the season anyway. For me, the biggest focus is just ensuring that the team make playoffs. So as much as I would want to play, I'm going to help out in any way I can, whether that's at practice, even if it's just giving the boys water when they need it. Just any little thing for me is going to be important to help the team do the best they can. So
what do you feel like has been the primary difference between last year and this year on-field product? You know, we went from Gary to Mick. We've had... last year, Tom kind of played a major role. This year, he's been kind of coming off the bench a little bit more. N4, you know, starred last year. This year, he's been kind of coming in and out. What dynamic has really changed this year? Because honestly, the record's about the same.
Yeah.
Has the team changed or has the league changed?
I think the league's definitely changed. I think everyone can see that every team is miles bigger this year.
Yes.
They are
huge. My God, I'm so glad you said that.
We talked about that on the last podcast. There was a 6'8" guy, I think, for Chattanooga.
Yeah.
They've gotten huge.
They are very big this year. I honestly believe that this year we're a better team. we pass the ball better, we play better.
I fully agree with that.
And we have a bigger strength in depth. Like last year, you could pretty much predict the team that was going to play. Now you don't know. Yeah. It changes every game. And that's a credit to all the boys. It's not because of injuries. We change every game because everybody deserves to play. The biggest problem we've had this year is just putting the ball in the back of the net. We have struggled really badly to score goals.
Well, could the excess of talent also create new coaching strategy issues as well? Because like you said last year, we knew exactly what we were going to get.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I think in soccer, as I'm sure you call it in London, soccer, right? Like, is that because
for sure.
We're socks? I try to figure that out. Or is it an actual, like, because we sock the ball? I don't know. Nonetheless. But, you know, last year we knew that we were going to have, you know, everybody out there. You kind of could count on that.
Yeah.
But I think with this game, chemistry is something that is something definitely to be valued. And if you saw with the World Cup, you see Germany and the switching of the lineup and so much talent.
Yes.
You know, you kind of see that they didn't have that chemistry.
Yeah.
And you feel that because of so much talent that there's a little different chemistry this year than last year.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of good players, like I've already said. I feel like in the back line, we've been very defensively solid. And we haven't really changed that much.
Yeah.
The defense has been the same.
Right.
Yeah.
So the front three in the middle, that's changed a lot. So you could say that could be a reason why we haven't scored as many goals. I personally just think we've been unlucky. I feel like we've had chances. It's not like we're not creating anything up there. We just can't score. And until, I guess, people start scoring more and it starts happening more often, it's going to be tough. I'm really looking forward to see what happens on Friday. I think Friday is going to be a huge one for us because we know it's almost a cup final. We have to win that game to make playoffs. If we can get a big win, I think we're going to finish the season really, really strong.
And there are, what, three games or two games left?
Three games left. Two against New Orleans and one against Greenville. So literally our fate is in our own hands.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think we dominated the Greenville game, but like Cameron said, just could not somehow find the back of the net. It just seemed like it's – and, I mean, when we played in Knoxville for a guy up, I mean, we had ball after ball after ball after ball and just could not find the back of the net. But, unfortunately, scoring goals wins games, and
exactly.
We have three games to turn that around. I mean,
it could still happen. I remember last year when Elmer came, he came late as well.
Yeah.
And every single game – he could just look at a ball and it ended in a goal.
Yep.
He just found the back of the net. And we're just waiting for that to happen this year. I'm sure it still will happen.
Well, so it might be hard to get M4 going if he's not dressed. Which is something that, you know, people know me from doing the podcast and just from being in amongst the team and with the players. And I don't know how many people have came up to me thinking I'm an aficionado of Asheville City and saying, where's Elmo? Where's Andrew? Is he hurt? I didn't know. I actually had to have a conversation with him via messenger just to find out exactly how you are not out there.
Yeah.
You know, because if you look at that Greenville game and that last, his creativity and creativity in the box is sort of what we lacked, I think. You know, you don't know. He might get a penalty call. He might get, you know, someone. And it just seems like I would love to see him back out there. Maybe not starting or whatever, but just to have him as an X factor to bring in. I think that's how he started out for us originally, coming off the bench being the secret weapon sub. I think that, you know, so that's kind of his role to a degree from the start.
I mean, I agree with you. We saw what he did last year. So there's no question about his ability. We know what he can bring. We know that once he gets one goal, I think the floodgates are going to open. He's going to continue to score. The problem he's had so far is that he hasn't scored from open play.
Mm-hmm.
But once that happens, I think he's going to be fine. But also, it's just a credit to the rest of the team, because if he's not playing, it shows you how well some of the other boys are doing in practice. That's how competitive this team is this year. It's very, very competitive, and we have a lot of strength in depth, especially in the forward areas. We've also rotated formations a lot, so we've tried everything. Because we know we're not scoring goals, we've literally tried every formation up top, and nothing seemed to work so far. And for me, I mean, it was paying off. I was scoring goals. I was just unfortunate that I got hurt. So
that injury happened, right?
I don't know. This year, all of a sudden, I'm like, wait a minute, okay, he's our weapon coach. I thought you were a defensive midfielder. I don't know what was going on. You're out there banging him in left and right.
It's weird. I've actually transitioned a lot. So my first 2 years of college, I was actually a defensive midfielder. But the last 2 years, I was playing further forward. And I started to get a lot of success. And this last year in particular, I was pretty much up top for my school. So I told the coach that, and he said, okay, I'll give you a shot there. And I think it's working. So.
Right. If we could just get you on the field.
So I know you didn't have much kind of crossover with him, but can you tell us a little bit about what it was like kind of maybe training or playing with Manny Perez?
Oh, okay. So Manny is a top guy, absolute top quality guy. So even before he came here, he was texting me, just asking me how it was.
That's awesome.
He assumed I knew, so he was like, how's the city? How's the team? How's it going to be? So me and him kind of formed a decent friendship. He wasn't here for that long, as I'm sure you've all noticed. But when he did play, he added something different that we don't have. He's so pacey, direct. He can beat a man 1v1. He can put a ball into the box. There really isn't anything he can't do. So he was just a really good guy to have around. It's honestly unfortunate that we didn't have him for very long, but I believe he's got some other opportunities.
You could say that.
Yeah, so,
And I do think Bruno has done a great job out there on that right wing, too.
Yeah.
He's doing... you know, maybe not the same things, but what he's doing out there on that wing week in, week out, he's doing extremely well. He's getting the balls into the box. It's, again, just the finishing product, making sure someone's on the end of those headers. You know, at the end of the Greenville game, I saw Jamie Smith pushed up playing in the midfield and possibly even forwards. And I think that's a little indicative of... you know, you put the people who can get the head on the ball, the foot on the ball, where they need to be. And in the last 10 minutes of that Greenville game, we needed something desperately. Yes. So it was nice to see at least Mick kind of shift people and rotate people up that gave us the best chance.
Well, I think that goes back to something that Cameron had said about the atmosphere. We're creating heroes and villains every weekend out there. I see it.
Great way to put it.
These kids come in, they're 19, 21. They go out, they're walking out like Ronaldo, some of these opponents. I mean, they think they beat the big time. I mean, it's nuts. I'm seeing these players transform in front of my eyes.
Yep.
And that end of the game, it's Greenville had so much grit to say, we're not going to let you score. The fans are yelling, the drum circle's going wow, we have hippies barefoot hula hooping. I don't know what's going on at these games anymore. It's been wild. It's a great atmosphere. But definitely creativity and finishing is something that we've lacked, and unfortunately we have three games to turn it around. Or fortunately we have three games to turn it around.
That's a great way to put it.
What is our playoff position right now? How's it like? How does it all shape out?
We're currently sixth in the table. So that puts us as being in the playoffs, but being hosted by number three, which I believe is Nashville at the present moment. So 3 and 4 will host 5 and 6. 7 and 8 fall out of the playoffs.
And New Orleans is actually a really good team.
They're second. But Greenville has beat them. Emerald Force beat New Orleans. Greenville beat them at home. It was their first loss in league play in 3 years at home. So they are susceptible.
It goes back to exactly what we before
Atlanta.
The NPSL, top to bottom. It is game to game. Everyone has a run. I like our chances.
Our conference this year has been absolutely insane. If you, the gap between the top team and the bottom team.
There is no gap.
It's unbelievable. I would never have predicted this, especially last year. It was completely different. You knew who the best teams were, and you knew who were going to fall out. But
scared me seeing Chattanooga come into our league, New Orleans come up into our division. But, you know, Chattanooga lost to Atlanta a couple weeks ago, or Georgia.
They lost to Georgia.
Georgia, 4-2. Atlanta.
Revolution have a pretty good squad.
They really do. They really
improved.
Atlanta's susceptible to some losses. Greenville's up and down. Emerald Force pulls out these big wins out of nowhere. It's definitely a table that's kind of cannibalizing itself. And it wouldn't surprise me if the sixth team that goes into the playoff wins the championship or Chattanooga runs away with it, either or.
Well, either. I mean, we're basically seeing a result of great competition on the field and all, and that's really a good thing overall for the league, to, you know, being that the MPSL now is basically what the USL was in the late 90s. I mean, I had spoke with people who, you know, in the late 90s, you got a USL franchise from basically where we are right now. So we're seeing the MPSL with this competition really turn into a good conference that we have and a good league overall. I mean, who has platformed from the MPSL? Hasn't someone just platformed from there to go to raise up to another division?
They're bringing in the ESL. Is that what Greenville?
Oh, Greenville. So the Greenville Pro Soccer, that's a part of the new USL Division 3.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I thought isn't Detroit FC, they're in PSL, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And oh, and you're saying they're graduating out of
it? I've heard that they're looking to move up.
It's possible.
From there, or they're going to platform to get either USL and possibly even an MLS bid at some point. Just from the fan base that's been created in the MPSL.
Oh, yeah. When you get 10,000 fans at a game, you can kind of pull those strings. So.
It's unbelievable.
And they travel.
Yeah. You go from a team that gets 7 fans to 10,000.
Yep.
We're in the same league.
Yeah.
And now, one thing that's really interesting, the Lamar Hunt Trophy, that's what is the U.S. Open, I believe.
Yeah.
How the MPSL teams do get into that.
Yeah.
Some do.
Yeah.
Some do.
If we progress through the playoffs and we make it into, I guess, the regionals, then yeah, we'll be a part of the U.S. Open Cup.
So the regionals, how exactly does that work?
I'm not sure how many teams it is. I think it's 18 from the MPSL and 18 from like the PDL, who's technically the equivalent. I believe the top 18 teams or from each region, so it'll be like maybe 6 from each region, the South. Those teams just get entered, so.
And, I mean, you're seeing teams from the MPSL play some really good competition in that.
Yeah.
Detroit FC played an MLS team, I think?
Yeah, and then Dallas came to Chattanooga and played a preseason friendly.
So you're seeing the MPSL, we're only 2 years deep, and you're seeing a lot of growth. Soccer in the USA is actually, I think, is really on the rise.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think
with
there's
that
any
being
way
said as well, my dad came over here for the first 2 weeks, and he was blown away by how big it is over here. Not just from our level, but even just youth soccer. He didn't expect it, because I can say there's a stereotype in England that we feel like you guys don't really understand how the game should be played.
Well, we call it soccer.
Yeah.
Like we said, is it soccer or is it actually we sock the ball? We don't know, but okay.
And yeah, but my dad's been involved in football for his whole life. So him coming here and seeing this, he was blown away. He didn't expect it. He said it's at a much higher level than he could have ever expected. And it's played at a younger age and supported at a young age better than he could have ever imagined.
It's a very meta question in terms of, you know, soccer is the number one youth sport up to a certain age, and then it becomes a travel sport if you're actually going to take part in it. And at that point, it becomes so prohibitively expensive.
Oh, okay.
You know, and especially in terms of travel.
Yes.
So, you know, the Asheville Shield, they don't just play Raleigh, Charlotte. They'll go to New England. They'll go to Florida. They'll go to Texas and play. And at that point, you're talking, what, $300-$400 a month plus uniforms, plus
that
meals.
Well, on the low end.
On the low side.
Yeah.
And that's where I really see, you know, you get your best players who the parents get that bill and they say, we can't do that. You're playing rec basketball. You're going to play high school baseball. You're going to play something that's going to keep you closer at home, that public education is going to pay for. And something has to be fixed within that. I know when you came to America, didn't you receive a scholarship?
Yes.
Can you explain a little bit about what that was?
So when I came over here, I received a soccer scholarship. So that pretty much covered my tuition, housing, and
that
like
was that from Young Harris, or was that? Okay.
So every school I've gone to, I've received a scholarship basically to play. So that's what's allowed me to even be here, because it would be way too expensive otherwise.
In the youth leagues in England, do you have, when you're in the academies, are you paying to be a part of that academy?
No, when you're in the academies, they're giving you money.
Yeah, see, that's the difference right there.
So when I was playing in academy football, they give us all the jerseys, all the gear, cleats. You could get reimbursed for your travel if you needed it. they really look after the players. It's a different environment. What I would also say is, though, is England's also a lot smaller, so travel isn't so much of a factor.
Yeah.
It's easy to get good competition right where you are. So,
well, it's smaller. It's also packed in, very yeah. metropolitan, very yeah. city environments in yeah. there as well.
Yeah.
So a lot of people in a small area as well. Mm.
I feel like the problem over here is America is so big. So if you want to have good competition, you are going to have to travel for it. And it's unfortunate. England's also very different in cost, I would say. So when you're playing grassroots football, so not academy, you might have to pay maybe $200 for the year to play, but that's about it. You don't have any other costs. I know over here it's a lot more expensive, so I know that's a problem with the youth soccer.
It's definitely an issue, and I've seen it. I've actually witnessed it firsthand from my family with youth sports and travel sports and whatnot. And a lot of sports are like that. You know, soccer, ice hockey, you know, certain things, even basketball and whatnot. Yep. You're getting
AAU.
Into traveling and stuff as
yep.
well. So that is definitely a pay to play. I know there are some subsidies and some scholarships that people who can't afford it get. If you look at Eddie Johnson.
Yep.
From the U.S. men's team,
yeah.
He was definitely came from nothing and worked his way up through travel and everything like that. I don't really know what the answer is. You know, if you look at the talent that we have in the United States, athletically.
Yeah.
There are so many people that are going towards football, going towards basketball. If we could just get some of that talent, maybe 10%
yeah.
of that talent to look somewhere else. And I think one thing that we're missing, and maybe I need to get into sports marketing and sports agents, I don't know. But there's a lot of money in soccer as well. Versus, let's say, for example, you're a kid growing up in, an underprivileged family in Los Angeles. You could try football.
Yeah.
You have one league.
True.
NFL.
Yeah.
If you're a soccer player, you could be in Netherlands, Belgium, and you're making some good money at any professional league. And
100%.
There's not only the first division, but most of those countries have first, second, and third division teams where you're still making a living. So I think when we see that transition in the United States, I don't see how we wouldn't become a powerhouse internationally with the men's team and just community-wise. We're seeing it grow. We're seeing that platform there for kids to kind of shine and show their skills. I don't know when we're going to catch on that the future is football, for your sake, Cameron. But,
yeah.
I don't know when we're going to catch on, but it looks like locally we're getting the right idea. That's
yeah,
sure.
I think the two things that really are going to play to soccer's advantage is A, the other major sports, NFL football and everything, there's so many head injuries right now, and soccer is not a sport that won't have head injuries. But people, I would, if I had a son, I would not let him play American football. I just wouldn't. Would I steer him towards necessarily to soccer? Maybe, because I love it. I would let him choose, but I just wouldn't let him play NFL football. So
yeah.
I think we're going to recoup a little bit of talent with that. Secondly, and this is, maybe my own idea of this, but I think attention spans for entertainment are reducing. Everybody wants instant gratification, and there is nothing like soccer in terms of instant gratification, because the clock doesn't stop. The ball is always moving, and I'm so glad I am no longer hearing from the majority of the world that a 0-0 game is boring, that a draw is a boring game. People are now starting to realize that the most intense game can happen on the pitch and still end 0-0
yeah.
and be entertaining, thrilling. You can leave that feeling like you've sweated buckets. And I think that plays very well into this kind of culture of the youth, which will be the next generation of Netflix binging and social media. They want short snippets of entertainment.
Also, though, to what we had said about the environment of the Asheville City Memorial Stadium, I think you're seeing the live experience really turning a lot of people on to soccer. I mean, if you look at Atlanta United, I've seen where they're getting attendance records that are getting up there with what Europe is doing. Am I right or am I wrong?
Yeah. Atlanta United is top 10 in the world in terms of attendance. That includes Russia, Germany, Spain, England. Now, of course, they're playing in the dome that seats 70,000 and not many other MLS teams. You know, you've got LA playing in like 20,000 seats, but they're filling it up.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And I think we are seeing, I'm witnessing it firsthand, some of that overflow into Asheville, because we're not far. I mean, I know a lot of the South Slope Blues go to games and stuff like that, and we're seeing a little bit of a kind of a movement of the live experience being something that people are looking into. New fans are getting, I actually had a conversation with one of the South Slope Blues who said it was the live experience from an Atlanta United game that really drove him to kind of taking on, you know, being a true fan of the game. So we're kind of we're right on the future of what is to come. I mean, we're part of it. This is the Southeast, and we're part of it. It's a beautiful thing.
Cameron, real quick before we let you go, what is your thoughts on VAR?
Okay. Honestly, I like VAR. People probably won't expect me to say that, but I think it makes games interesting. Don't get me wrong, there's times where I see players, even after a little call or a little nudge, they're going like this on the TV and making the symbol. And
I'm not,
I'm not in for all of that, but I like the fact that if a wrong call is being made, it can now be, I mean, pretty much fixed on the spot. Don't get me wrong, there's a lot of hiccups of it right now. It's not smooth, but I think that's only going to improve. I just like the fact that we're going to see more goals, we're going to see more excitement, more things are going to happen, and it's just going to make it overall more exciting.
Do you think it's going to solve, to a degree, diving?
I hope so, eventually. Right now, I still think it's too far away. I feel like diving is almost become a part of the game now. It's just one of them things.
Let's call it embellishment.
It's just, it's a part of it, and it's too deep right now. So I don't see that changing. But VAR as a whole, I think it's going to be a good thing for the sport. Once they can get it right and allow it to be quicker. Because that's the problem I feel like people have. It takes so long.
Well, the referee in football has so much power. You know, in terms of just one person can just change a game, one call, a mismanagement. You know, not to go back, we're thinking about talking a little bit about some of the games, but this interview, we're kind of just flowing, and I don't know if we're going to get to that on this pod. But at the end of the Greenville game, I've never witnessed anything quite like that. So you were there, you saw it.
Yeah.
We have 6 minutes of additional time. Okay, we're down a goal. That's an eternity. That's a free kick. That's a penalty kick. That's a direct kick. There's eternity there. The end of the game, the Greenville defender gets a yellow card into about 4 minutes of the additional time. He doesn't stop. He doesn't go away. He actually goes and knocks the ball away from the player. With 4 minutes in, the referee doesn't choose to, as a U.S. certified ref like myself, the proper protocol for that would be to give a second yellow, remove the player, add the additional time to the game, set us up for a direct kick. He calls the game with into 4 minutes of stoppage time, almost rewarding the defender for his antics, which directly influenced the game. So one thing that I have to say, as we talk about VAR, a consistency in reffing is something that any league and any match is going to benefit from. And that's something that I've seen a lot of inconsistencies with reffing in the MPSL. I can't say it's directly the MPSL. We've seen a lot of consistencies in the World Cup.
Yeah.
It's one call to someone, it's another call to someone. It's a way to handle it for someone, it's another way to handle it for another ref. But I think consistency is something we need, and hopefully VAR, at least allowing an outside perspective to come in and say, let's relook at that, let's take another glance, that's good for the game. So that's how I kind of view it in relation to our game. I think VAR will only be a positive to come. Maybe not every game, but for at least games that matter, they all matter, but championship games. We're going to see it with the Champions League and semifinals and quarterfinals and World Cup. I think it's a good thing overall.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Cameron.
Thank
we appreciate it.
Mr. Asheville, it's been a pleasure, my friend.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And get back on the field, okay?
I'm trying. Honestly, Friday looks a bit too soon. However, the Greenville game, I don't know if you're going to be there on July 4th.
I hope so.
I expect to.
That's your thing. Yeah.
I expect to be involved.
In God bless America. Thanks, guys.
I guess that's why they call us the Blues. Time on our hands could be time spent with Bruce. Drinking like tourists, yelling like drunkards, scoring some sunners will win you over. And I guess that's why they call us the Blues.
You've been listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, a proud member of the Soccer and Sweet Tea Network. Thank you to Audionautics for our music, and find us on social media at your_smarter on Twitter and at yoursmarterthanus@gmail.com.